So obviously, we've tried to get you on the show here for a little while now, and the timing couldn't be more perfect. I'm saying this with a half a smile, so my dad, who will be listening, can know that I'm joking, sort of, as he embarks on another surgery, and he's now, you know, he's getting up to almost 70, which is like a crazy thing to think. Yeah. And I just get to this point where, and maybe it's like this generation, we have, like, unlike ever before, we've never really accounted for, like, how do we take care of our parents?
Right.
Like, none of us are. And, like, even if we are, we're not. Like, it's...
Nope.
It's just, like, what sources and resources are out there for me to, like, take care of them? Because it's not going to be me.
Right.
And I just started laughing because my mom and I had a conversation today about what am I doing on the Wednesday of his surgery this month and then the Thursday when someone has to pick him up. And she's like, you're going to pick him up because, you know, you can handle after surgery behavior better than I can.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was like so timely because what your business does, what Kazen does, is going to be one of the most important things for people who are 30 to 40 now in the next decade.
Yeah.
Because we've, and like the business is built for those who are older. It's not built for us, but the people who actually are going to benefit maybe the most are those of us who are younger who are trying to figure out, like, how are we taking these people to and from where they have to go to get surgery or to get rehab or to get, you know, medication, whatever it is. And for most of us, you know, it's a weird thing, but like, I was actually just totally make this full circle. I was talking to one of the people who works here at WGN, Tabitha, a little shout out to her husband, Matt Green, about their lives being totally involved in their child.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives are basically reduced, and mine too now as a father of a four-month-old. Our lives are going to be compressed into basically stewarding around this child from place to place. And in the olden days of like 1980, we were fairly like sedentary as people. Like, we kind of had our routines, and your kid went to camp and
school activities.
Yeah, but, like, you didn't, like, your bosses took them. Right. Like, you didn't really go anywhere.
No.
And so, like, when you added the burden of another parent or a grandparent that you had to take care of, it didn't feel like it was that big of a burden.
Right.
We now live this like mobile life.
Yeah.
And we're everywhere. We're traveling. We're working remotely. Our schedules are like a bomb went off.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that like society has built a mechanism to like put that end of life care into the fit. It doesn't fit.
No, and it's not all about end of life. I mean, think about it.
That was a very grim way for me to describe it. I don't mean it's the end of your life. I just mean it's like, it might be the end of my life. That's what I'm trying to stop.
But think about if you didn't have a car.
Yeah.
And your kid needed to get back and forth to their medical appointments or get to school or get to the pharmacy. How are you going to do that? You can't just go jump in an Uber or Lyft. It's illegal. You can't get in a taxi.
Yeah, I found that out. I just found that out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how. I must be insane. My wife probably is like, what did I marry? when we started talking about, like, the child, so it's too late. She was pregnant at the time. And she's like, well, you know, you're going to have to do this and that. And I was like, no, you just stuff the kid in an Uber and send the Uber to wherever the practice is. And she's like, no. Like, that's not how that
Not until they're 18.
What?
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you do? Like, what do you do? I mean, I don't...
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I mean, if you think about our health and, you know, the company name is Kaizen Health, but our health takes place about 10 to 20% inside of a clinical setting, right? Inside of a clinic or inside of a hospital. But everything else that we do is about our health. Going to get food, right?
Yep.
Go to the grocery store, getting to our jobs, getting to school, you know, getting our kids around, going to interact with society. That's the other 80% of our lives.
Yeah.
And that is what makes us up and what makes us healthy. And so in order for society to move around, I mean, everyone has like different abilities. And so there's never really been a place to bring together all types of transportation into one place so that anyone, regardless of their physical or mental abilities, can get a ride. So we aggregate all types of transportation. So yes, we work with Uber and Lyft and taxis, but then we also work with wheelchair accessible vehicles, and vehicles that have car seats for kids. And guess what? It's not just a car seat. It's got to have the forward facing, the backward facing, the booster seats, right? And then you've got medivans, non-emergency ambulances, delivery and courier services for when you can't get out. And people's abilities are constantly changing. Like, your dad's having surgery in a few weeks. He's going to need help for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. He might go home in
It'll
a wheelchair.
Because he'll be having a shoulder replacement.
Oh, yeah.
So God have mercy on our household.
I will be thinking about you guys.
Me too.
I'll be thinking about you guys. But
I'll be thinking about you there, Dad.
He's going to need some help for a couple of weeks. But then a couple of weeks later, like, he's going to need less help. And a couple of weeks later, he's going to need less help. And so, you know, if you think about, you know, someone who has a planned hip replacement, knows they're going home in a wheelchair, you know, for a few days, and you can sort of put a plan in place. Your dad is having a planned surgery, right? But what if one of us walked outside and fell and broke our hip and we have to go have our hip replaced? We're not planning on that, right? And so you all of a sudden are faced with all these logistical challenges. Like, are you having to go to, like, a skilled nursing facility to go recover for a few days? And then are you going home? And do you need a wheelchair for a few days? And then now you're up walking. I mean, things happen and change so quickly. So you've got to be able to have all types of transportation to get somebody. They call it curb to curb, door to door, door through door, and bed to bed.
I don't know why I'm surprised in any way that there's a we talk about the last mile in every other business.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know why it never dawned on me that the medical last mile might have been the original last mile.
It probably was the original last
mile. It had
mile.
To be. Yeah. Well, maybe the cemetery might be the last mile.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know why I keep going grim.
I was like, you keep going.
It's not a dark day. It's a beautiful day. I don't know what
gorgeous.
My problem is. No, I find this conversation fascinating on a personal level. And then the investor cap starts coming on, and Chicago has really blossomed into a healthcare city. I mean, we obviously had recent acquisitions, and we had Livongo, which is no longer based here, but started here IPO, and they just recently landed a gigantic contract, thank God, because their stock recovered, and that was good for me. But the thing that I find interesting is you start looking at the total addressable market. And one of the areas that you have landed in, and there's a couple, and I'll lay this out a little bit for the people listening. There's a couple of areas that I'm obsessed with right now. This is one of them, because it lives in what I call digital purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
Digital purgatory, for the listener who is younger, this makes sense immediately. For the older one, you're like, what do you mean? This is what I mean. Digital purgatory is for those who know a little bit about using their phone, their iPhone, and they kind of like navigate, but they're not used to being reliant on algorithms to determine where and when they do things, and an app to set up their pickup and drop off, and their lives are basically dropped on this invisible, you know, line. It's like a factory line, and young people are already used to it
for sure.
And people who are my age are not, which I'm not young, but I'm not old. Obviously, I'm 35, so I'm like right there in the middle. We have adapted for the most part. So for me, I just assume that as I age and get older and as things come up, like, I will not be offended, nor will I expect that my wife will drop everything and our family will stop what we're doing because I have to go to surgery, like, unless it's like, you know, dire.
Right.
I would assume that I'm just going to drop myself on the internet, move, and
off you'll go.
And off I'll go. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Older folks are not there yet.
No.
And so we have this like patchwork healthcare system. And this goes for a couple other places too, where they use digital up to a point and then they just sort of stare at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there are companies like yourself that are building and building and building and raising and prepping for the turnover of when, like, you'll have a great business for the next 10 years, but it's the next 15 years where you have like ridiculous scalability, because once the 35s turn to 45, and we start getting into the hospital care more frequent thing, and our kids are getting into, you know, things.
Breaking legs. And,
correct. All the good stuff.
Right.
We will be a natural flip.
Oh, for sure.
To that, right?
For sure.
And I think of businesses like esports. To me, this doesn't make any sense, but esports and media as a whole are also very interesting to me, because they sit on this line of, We're used to watching physical people play football.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move into a place where we gamble and play and exchange Bitcoin or whatever it is. Watching digital creations do ungodly things on a screen, and that will be competitive and we'll be into it.
Right.
And so all those companies are spending tons of money getting into it, but it's not for tomorrow. It's like, you know, 5 years from now. Same thing with other media entities that are building for short form and just different styles of stuff. There are a handful of areas where investors, I think, are just sitting back waiting for people like Kazin that are coming in to create a digital connective point that will, this is the wrong term, but will semi-automate a lot of the hardships that we currently are physically trying to do.
Oh, for sure. I mean, in sort of the Medicaid space, your typical broker, you're having to call 2 to 3 days in advance to schedule a ride, and you sit on hold, and you jump through all this red tape. And that's just not the expectation that we have today, right? So we expect to pick up our phones. I mean, if you think about the Medicaid population, that's pretty young, typically. So we built out a program with Molina and CareSource in Columbus, Ohio. They have the highest rate of infant mortality. And they the city hired Sidewalk Labs, one of Google's consulting companies, to do research that try to figure out why. And they determined it was a lack of transportation to prenatal and postnatal appointments, as well as a lack of access to fresh food. Well, these women actually did have access to medical transportation. It was just through this very archaic process. You have to be picked up at home, dropped off at home, 2-hour windows on either side of your appointment. You're calling in. And the women just weren't using it because it just doesn't fit into their life. And so we built out our web and mobile platform so that we could give them the control. So the ride types are all controlled, you know, like how many times can they go to the grocery store, to social services, or to their providers or pharmacies, and what time of day, and what's the distance, and what are the approved places. And so there's all these like business rules that we've ingested. But then by giving it to the women, they can say, here you go, schedule your ride when you need it to the places, and it's within our business rules, and so it works. And it makes a big difference. They're actually very compliant. And there's also a lot of overhead in that space, right? In the broker space, they're making $10 to $14 on the top of cost of each ride. If somebody else is just doing it from an app, think about how much you can lower that administrative cost.
My question was going to be the addressable market. How big of an opportunity is this for you guys?
I mean, they say that the non-emergency medical transportation market is $150 billion worldwide.
That's insane.
By 2022 or something like that. So it's huge. Medicaid alone is doing 105 million rides annually. But, you know, if you look at sort of healthcare as a whole, we work with provider systems, we work in Medicaid and Medicare Advantage, we do clinical trials, we do in-home health care, senior living, work with municipalities directly, we work with nonprofits. So a lot of these sectors aren't counted in that. I mean, the market is huge.
Yeah. And I mean, I assume that that doesn't really also include the cost savings area here.
Oh, not at all.
If you looked at this as like a managed service, you earned all that business.
Yep.
And then you went back and built in fixes to make it more efficient.
Yep.
And you said, I'll own the cost. Don't worry about it.
Yep.
It's a big cost, but I'll own it. And then you went back and were able to figure out 20, 30% cost savings, and that's all just profit for you. I mean, that would be...
Or you can
push it. I mean, you push back to them, obviously.
Right. So, you know, in sort of the work that we're doing, the other big thing is transportation companies have been treated very poorly in healthcare. So you've got this sort of traditional broker model where they're paid 50 or 70 cents on the dollar at best, and they're not treated very well. So when I did research, so I had some family problems that were the inspiration for starting the company. And so when I was doing my research, the transportation companies are like, I have no interest in speaking to you. I have no more Medicaid rides, no more healthcare rides. And I'm like, tell me why. And they're like, A, we don't get paid well, and B, we don't get respected. And I'm like, okay.
That answers so much. That
right.
Literally makes so much sense.
I was like, well, let's address those things. And so we've taken a big turn on sort of the economic model where the brokers have taken capitation. So they make the same amount of money every month if they give one ride a day or 1,000 rides a day. So guess how many rides a day they're incentivized to give? Not 1,000.
Yeah.
So we've turned into just a cost plus model where we are 100% transparent. We pay market rates to our transportation partners, and in sort of that brokered model, if they have a chance to go give a ride to the airport to somebody for a full fare versus taking a healthcare ride for 50 or 70 cents on the dollar, they're going to take the full fare ride all day. And then we wonder why healthcare transportation is broken. I mean, something like 4 million people miss or delay medical appointments because of lack of transportation. Yeah. And we wonder like why we have these like terrible statistics. And it's because at the foundation, we've treated transportation as like the redheaded stepchild.
Yep.
But really, they're at the core of this and should be elevated. And that's what we've done. So we pay them market rates. Our administrative costs are so much lower because everything that the brokers are doing manually, right? Like call centers, checking eligibility, plugging into four or five different programs, faxing over orders to a transportation company. Like, I mean, the stuff is so archaic. We're doing all that programmatically. So our overhead is so much lower. So we can pay the transportation partners better. We can lower the overhead and still lower the overhead or the overall cost of transportation and still be more profitable than the brokers.
So you talked about the amount of, well, I mean, it's money lost and money spent on the insurance side for people who miss their appointments and whatever happens out of that. It's kind of a funny side story, but I live in a condo in Glen Ellyn that is effectively, we say, what is the word I'm looking for? We say this kindly. We mean this in good kind. It's essentially an old age home.
Okay.
It's like everybody is just 100.
Yep.
And I went to Northwestern Medical. I don't remember if this was for my hand or if it was for the kid. I don't remember what it was. But I was sitting there and I was like, man, this place is packed. And I talked to the doctor. He's like, oh, I'm normal day, like, you know, whatever. I was like, why? There's like 14 old ladies and men sitting out in the waiting room. And he's like, so they all... And apparently this is coming from, like, it tied things together for me. So when I leave in the morning, there's a PACE bus. It's like a little bus that comes through, and it stops at the two or three buildings that are right next to me. And all these old people pile on. I thought they were going to bingo or something. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is a very common practice for all of those older folks who do make their appointments on time. What they have to do to make that work is they all have to pile into a PACE bus at, like, 8 in the morning and go to their... to go to Northwestern Medicine. And then they sit there.
For hours.
For hours.
Yep.
So like they all had an appointment anywhere from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And they're still sitting
there. And they just sit there because the only way for that to functionally work with people with them not driving, they're not really comfortable with a cab. Maybe they have disabilities. They can't get in a cab. Whatever.
Don't have the money.
Don't have the money. Whatever it is. They have to sit and wait for a PACE bus. And that's how this is done. That's what happens. That's the good version.
Oh, that's a good version.
That's the good version
of
this.
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
I grew up in Iowa, in a town of like 25,000 people. So, you know, think about how
that's
it would
be different. That's a huge city in
Iowa. Oh, it actually is. Like
say, my family's from Almaquie County in Iowa, in upper northeast Iowa. And that town's like 1,100. And some of the other ones are like, we drove through a town that's like 200 people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Side story.
I mean, it is sizable for Iowa. But my mom's sister had MS 4 years ago. She was only 53. She lived at home and she was perfectly able to take care of herself, but she started to lose a little muscle strength and needed physical therapy a couple times a week. Shouldn't have been a big deal, except she'd never gotten her driver's license because she had five brothers and a sister to spoil her and drive her around. And the Medicaid transportation there was so horrible. My family's all working. They're all very young. So she had no reliable way to get back and forth to physical therapy a couple times a week. So she had to move into a nursing home. Monday through Friday,
that's
and
we
go home on the weekends. And
so the quality of life and the cost that the family pays for that is insane.
It's Medicaid paying for it. I mean, her experience is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine being 53 in an end-of-life nursing home. She was miserable.
Yeah.
And so I started looking into other options for her. But then my mother-in-law was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer at 55 a month later. Very different situation, though.
Yeah.
Like, she's young. She lives out here in the north suburbs. She worked full time, had insurance, good insurance. She had a car. She had money. She's not the person that you think about needing transportation, right?
Yep.
But as she was going through treatment, she was just completely wiped out.
Yeah, she can't drive.
She couldn't drive. And so, you know, our family was lucky enough to shuffle things around and get her back and forth to treatment, you know, sometimes spending 7 or 8 hours on the road in a given day. But the situation that you were just describing, like during that time, we also saw people just sitting around for hours. Imagine going through chemo and then still having to sit there for 4 hours, right? Or dialysis.
I'm in a bad mood waiting in line at the grocery store.
Right.
Like I'm very surly.
Yeah. And as you're waiting a few minutes, like a dialysis patient, when I was doing my research, I talked to this young woman. She was about my age, and she was like, yeah, I only go to dialysis twice a week because I have to be picked up at home and dropped off at home. It's a 4-hour long appointment as it is. You've got 2-hour windows on either side of that where you're sitting at the door just looking and seeing, like, is my ride here yet? And she knows that if she goes twice a week, she can sort of maintain her health, end up in the emergency department once a quarter, and then in an inpatient stay. But she's like, if I could just be picked up at home and dropped off at work, I could go 3 times a week. And I'm like, well, why can't we do that?
Yeah.
Like, we can. Like, let's change this. So it's stuff like that that just nonsensical in today's world.
So you talked a little bit about, obviously, the inspiration from the family side as to, like, why you had a personal connection to solving this. But you have had, as you self-proclaimed startup junkie, passionate about kind of solving these difficult problems that others sort of see but don't see the way you see it. What has been your sort of story and journey just from a career standpoint? Like, what gets you to a point where, like, I'm going to start Kaizen, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to lock down my life and do this.
I don't know if I ever agreed to do it. I think it just happened. So I actually started.
I just get myself fired into a career.
I started my education very clinically. I've always been drawn to healthcare, so pharmacy and anesthesiology, before deciding not to practice, and then sort of fell into the startup world, not on purpose. A lot of my friends were going, and getting, jobs at, large companies. That was, like, the cool thing to do back then. And I was like, oh, I'll go work at this startup or, small company while I'm going to grad school. And then just sort of fell in love with the idea that, like, at a small company or startup, you get to do a lot, right? You get exposed to a lot. Like, I grew up very quickly. Like, my first startup after I moved to Chicago was Homemade Pizza Company, which I am not a foodie. Like food, but it was a fantastic opportunity. I was like their first HR manager, and we were growing like crazy, and I knew nothing about that, but here I was like 23 years old and like hiring people,
hats.
Doing like payroll, benefits, like setting up new stores in different cities and learning all the compliance rules. And I mean, I had to grow up very, very quickly. And then got into M&A in the veterinary industry. So we acquired and managed veterinary practices. And from there, went to a tech company and then got to sell that company and being on the selling side. And so it's just, the challenges, the unique challenges. And I will definitely say, without sort of all of these experience, and then my most recent position was at Matter. I was the director of operations, getting Matter up and running a health tech incubator here in town. And
we love Steve.
Absolutely. Without the experience of sort of like Matter and then sort of touching everything from finance, HR, business ops, really exciting stuff like business insurance and learning all the things along the way.
Thing.
Right. Oh yes. I really love that there's other people at our company that do that now, and it's no longer up to me.
Now is a great time to plug a previous podcast. We had Cover Wallet on just recently, and you can go to the Technory podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, or technory.com for it. But one of the biggest things that we talked about, they have a thing called Startup Wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was like, startups are, and we can go into this for days on the why this is, but there it's ADD and just this, like, I only want to address problems that I actually can solve and learn, and it's going to be most valuable to me. And finding good insurance just isn't that thing. And like they just take whatever is in front, done.
Yep.
Because it's like, if I tell you what I'm planning, you're going to tell me that I need like 15 versions of coverage.
Exactly.
It's going to get stupid fast. So I'm just going to tell you I'm a consultant and we'll call it a day.
We'll call it a day.
Yeah. And it's like the number of startups operating on just like errors and omissions, insurance alone, and like liability is crazy.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. We've been very lucky to have a great insurance partner, thankfully.
Well, I hope you guys will.
Being in healthcare and transportation,
it's kind of like you might be the most insured.
Yeah. We might be one of the most insured startups.
But it's like it's stuff like this that I find interesting. I've said this to, this is probably not the audience, but I mentor kids at Northwestern, students, they're not even kids at this point, grad students, etc., at Northwestern and at Marquette. And I tell almost every one of them, they're like, oh, we're thinking about grad school or whatever. And I haven't gone so far as to say this replaces actual basic like bachelor college, but we're getting close. Based on the prices I would rather my daughter Vivian go and take out a credit card, not my money, a credit card for 65 to 100 grand and spend it on a year to 18 months, ideally as long as she can and never, hopefully never run out, but like have an expiration date of like 18 months.
Yep.
And build a company around, I don't even care what it is.
Yeah.
You will learn more about this stuff than business school can ever teach you.
Oh, for sure.
And you'll have 1,000 connections as a result.
And it's the same amount of money.
Oh, yeah. And in some cases, if you have a good lawyer, you can just write that down.
Right?
You can't bankrupt your way out of a school debt.
No, you can't.
So, like, I highly recommend people listening. Like, you didn't obviously plan to, like, you know, shit can 100 grand. But you did, like, definitely learn by jumping into the fire, like this is something I could learn, then this, and you sort of fold origami style into a career. And then the other part of this, I think, is really important for people to know, and we can talk more about this on your end, is I don't even know how to, just because you have a great idea or access to funding doesn't necessarily mean now is the time for you to start something, because I feel like most of these founders that I meet, they're going through these problems where I want to say, yes, I can tell you kind of the way around it. Until you feel the pain on your own, I just don't think you're ready to take on a company. Like,
it's not easy.
No.
Right? Like, and even sort of like growing up in the startup world and seeing all of the ups and downs and craziness, like, I still like don't feel like I was prepared, which was a good thing because had I known what was going to happen over the last like 3.5 years, I would have been like, hell no, I'm not doing this.
Well, you get desensitized.
You do.
Like I have almost no feelings at this point.
Right. No.
Which it's actually a challenge at my home life, because what I think the majority of people like my wife deals with and her friends, you know, it's the most important thing today. The baby didn't sleep, whatever. It's like this thing. And for me, it's like, it's a thing. It's just another thing with another thing. Like until you've looked at your bank account and it's negative -3 grand and people are calling on money and you've got,
you're like, what do I, like, how am I making that next payroll?
Yeah. Like that's real. Like that's pain.
Right.
And you get to a point now where it's like something gets dropped on the plate and like, oh, we'll figure it out.
Like,
we always
fine.
Yeah,
yep.
We always do. We always figure it out.
I know. Thankfully I'm like pretty easygoing, because I think sometimes
you
like,
have to be.
My like, you know, our team will come up and they'll be like, Mindy, like there's this thing, and I'm like, all right, cool,
down.
Like
we're good.
What is it? Or like, what do you think we should do? You know, like, and you know, then you fix it and move on. And if you don't have the right fix, then you go back and try again, and it's cool. But it's like, you know, early on when we were, you know, getting this company up and running, and you know, my husband was very encouraging and then very like cynical at the same time. That's just kind of his personality. But he's like, he'd poke holes. He'd be like, because I'd be like, okay, well, here's this thing. And then he'd come back. He's like, well, it could be solved this way, or you know, and then I'd go back and find something. And he's like, I finally ran out of like holes to poke. So I was like, go do it, right? And the plan was for him to, you know, work and let me like do this. I had taken on some consulting work initially, but and then his company got acquired and to Adobe, and then he got let go because he's in sales and whatever. But we ended up like blowing through our savings. We went $50,000 into credit card debt twice.
Yep, know that one.
Went without health insurance for a year. Like stopped paying our mortgage for 6 months, and like all the things that I said like up front, like we will not do this. Yep. And
but you can't you can't do both.
No,
I've come to that conclusion that like you can say, I said this to my wife before we got married. It's like, I personally, not just because I'm nuts, I think we're going to have a fantastic life. It's going to be a lot of fun. But they're the only, and I really mean this, and anyone listening, if you're going to start a company, this is not like food for thought. Like, I mean it. You cannot successfully be a founder or run a company with rules.
No.
Like, laws is one thing.
Yeah.
Rules, if you have preset rules, like, can't, got to be home at this time, got to do this, got to pay this, nothing can ever go broke here. Sorry.
It doesn't work. It
doesn't work that way, because you're going to have to beg and pull from the pot occasionally.
For sure.
That's just the life.
I mean, there's been so many ups and downs that you're like, is this going to make it? You know, yeah. Especially early on.
In
like,
the same week, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, in the same day, you could be like having like the best day, to, you know, then, to start. And then it's like by lunchtime, it's like everything's blown up. And then by the time, you know,
home,
like,
you're like, oh, shit, you're like, this looks okay.
All right, everything's back to good again, you know. But it's like it's an emotional roller coaster for sure.
I almost wonder if there's a personality. People talk about the personality of entrepreneurs all the time. Yeah. It's kind of played out. But I do think that there's like two types of personalities that have any sort of like preset chance of success. And I think it's either completely tyrannical and they control everything and they're just a total asshole to work with. But they get it done always. They always finish.
Yep.
And the other one is someone who's completely self-content passive, which you're describing yourself as like, I'm like that. Like I'm tyrannical in certain aspects.
Certainly you have to be.
Yeah. But like I don't think that the throttle never, I don't boil it over. It's always like, I might be geared up on the energy side, but like on the, where you have me at, like you have to do a lot to get me to like actually like red line.
Yeah. One of my colleagues, said he's like never heard me raise my voice, and I'm like, what's the point? Like, I mean, is that going to really do anything? Like, I can get my point across if I'm not happy with how something's going with a vendor or a colleague or whatever it might be. It's like I can have a conversation and still get my point across without screaming and yelling.
If I do that, if I go off on a rant or tangent, it's manipulating.
Oh, for sure.
It's me doing it's me doing it. Like I know I'm like, I know that this person will respond to that.
For sure.
So I'm literally going to go in and just throw everything at the wall because I know that will freak them out.
Yep. Yeah.
But like my actual like sub, which is why I think I'm able to do that, because like I can be in, I can say all the right things because I'm in control. Like,
right. And I think I just like, I run at such like a high level of like stress, anxiety, ADD, OCD, like that, like it's just normal, but that's my normal. Right. And so like for me to like get above that, I mean, that's like difficult to push me sort of above that. And so I think just because I run up here, it's like, it's fine.
So $1 million question on this is, when you were younger, were you always at that like kind of point? I mean, obviously there's like the growing up maturity age, that's a little different, but like, I actually wrote this note down when you were talking about like, if somebody asked me, and I've answered this and didn't say this, but now I would, from now on, I will answer this way. When I knew I could be or would be an entrepreneur, in retrospect, I could have told you I should be an entrepreneur when I was 16 years old, sitting in a van going to a golf meet, and my coach said I'm uncoachable. And I was like, oh, I should have told you right there. Entrepreneur, completely, there's no way that you'll ever work on like a team that you're not somehow architecting.
Interesting.
Were you, as a youngster, a person who always was sort of like, I'm in control of it, like I'm calm, or did it take you like 10 years and a lot of ups and downs.
A little bit of a control freak. I mean, so as I look back at who I was sort of like growing up, I played 4 sports. I was on the dance team. I was in band, chorus, mock trial.
So you were a high achiever then.
I was like, and good at school naturally. And like, I just was like, go, 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 go. And just like very interested in everything. But I could not let myself fail either. You know, if I got a B, like, I was like devastated. I was actually, my parents just moved a couple months ago. And so I inherited all of this stuff from when I was a kid. And I was going through it the other day. And I showed my husband, I was like, look, like this is like, I don't know, high school chemistry or something. And I was like, oh, I'm like, look at this. I got a B+. He's like, but why down here do you have like, you have over 100% in the class? And he's like, oh, because you look right here. And it's like, you did like extra credit work. Yeah, he's like, of course you would.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you? And he's like, because who cares? And
see,
I'm like,
I lived on
the
extra credit, but not the actual work. Like I would go in and tell the teachers, I'd look through the syllabus and be like, all right, so if I skip these classes and I don't do these and this and I don't do homework, I'm at what, like a 70%? So if I do the extra credit and I perform here on the midterms, I'm a B.
I'm a good. Right?
And they're like, yeah, you're good. I'm like, but I don't recommend it. I'm like, no, this is what I do.
I got this figured out.
I feel like, so I wasn't like you in the, I was go, go, go. And when I was into something, I was obsessed. So like when I would get into sports, whether it was basketball, baseball, every sport, I had a season where I was like, I would make MVP at all conference. Okay. But then the other seasons, it would just be like, just guy.
It's fine. Yeah.
Because it was like, I'm obsessed. I'm going to become the best shooter. I'm obsessed. I'm going to become the best golfer. That year and that time, I'm
You're all in.
I'm all in. But then after that, once I achieved it, I didn't give a shit.
It was, yeah.
It was just whatever. It wasn't.
So I think for me, like, and I think it speaks to my career, I'm not good at anything. But I'm, like, okay at, like, a lot of things.
Yep.
You know,
but you outwork everybody.
I could write a little bit of code, right? Like, I know, like, finance world. I know HR. Yep. You know, I know, like, all the sports. But it's, like, I'm never going to be an expert in anything. Yep. Like, a CPA, you know, anything like
I'm
that.
I'm like that, too. I think I have the extra gear. That's my strength is not that I have an expertise in something in particular as much as great general knowledge and a gear that I can reach that others can't reach.
Yeah. So like, I just... can't stop.
Yeah.
Is well, that
yeah,
the gear? Also,
that is.
No
it's,
breaks.
It's the motor. It's all speed, all go, yeah. No stop. And like everything is a task in my head. So like it doesn't matter to me whether there's 100 of them or 2 of them.
Yeah.
I don't stop until the loop is closed. It just doesn't turn off.
No.
And yeah, it's so, I just think it's fascinating when I have conversations with people like you, because it's like, there is definitely a makeup and we can argue all day, entrepreneur made or caught or whatever. There's a certain... like stay above the fray, never really dipped into the troubles that other people got lost in because it was just never even dawned on me. Like I never
didn't
thought
have time.
Of it. Yeah, I didn't realize that was an option.
No.
Like it wasn't like,
no.
Like I knew where I was going. I didn't know where, nor did I care where you were going.
Right.
Like that was not part of the equation, which is going to be huge for you, obviously, as Kaizen scales up, because it's like there's going to be a million entrants. And
yeah, there's already a handful of competitors. One's already exited, had a nice exit like a year ago.
What are you doing? Let's go.
I'm not ready to exit yet. I've got a lot of work to do. I feel like we're just scratching the surface. So, you know, just the other day, one of our clients, Cone Health, they're out in North Carolina, shared with us a story. And, you know, I get pretty removed from sort of like patient interaction or, you know, like more direct interaction these days. But they shared with us that this woman had, she had cancer and she had been going to her oncology treatment. Her neighbor had been taking her. And I guess the neighbor made some like off the cuff comment that like, and it wasn't like supposed to be like intentionally like bad, but I think she took it that way.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I kind of have to plan my whole day around you when I'm taking you to treatment.
Yeah, I could see
and
that.
So the woman was like, okay, so she didn't go to our next treatment. She told her neighbor, no, I'm good. I don't need a ride. She didn't go. And so the nurse called and was like, hey, where are you at? And she's like, well, I'm not going. I'm discontinuing my treatment. It's too much of a burden on my neighbor, and I don't have any other way to get there. And she's like, no. She's like, we have a program through us, Kaizen, and everything we do is branded on behalf of our clients. So no one ever knows, no patients know who Kaizen is. But so she got rides back and forth to her oncology treatment a couple of weeks ago. She rang the bell. She was done. She's
awesome.
Cancer free. But that woman had given up. And so it's like when I hear stories like that from our clients, I'm like, I can't give up. Like these guys aren't giving up. Like we have so much work to do.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a long time.
It's a great story. Where do people go to learn more and follow you guys?
KaizenHealth.org.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
In. Of course. To invest in featured startups or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, go to technori.com. Boom. That's a wrap. We're good. Sweet.
That wasn't bad.
Right?
No, you were fun.
I try to be.
Yeah.
I try to keep it cool. Sometimes it's a little down.
No.
Get dark. But thank you very much for coming
in.
I appreciate it. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you.
I think we're a week and change out on the shows. So
should probably,
we didn't get into the
investment. We'll send it over in like a week, week and a half or so.
We could still, I think, post this through the, like when you guys do the investment round. You know.
Yeah. So we're due to close in 10 days.
Okay.
So I'll let you know for sure. Like,
yeah,
when
just
it's
let us
closing.
Know on that. So make a note of that, Rachel. We're going to try to post this when they close their round.
Gotcha.
So figure
give me a... Hopefully it's 10 days. Maybe it'll be 12. You know how this shit goes.
Yeah. Could be 30.
But everything's looking good.
Okay.
So
cool.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, Mike, I'm going to do an intro quick here. And then in the beginning, I said Kaizen twice. If you could replace it with Kaizen, I'll say Kaizen once real quick so you can drop it in. In the beginning, there's two in the first like 5 minutes. I said Kaizen instead of Kaizen. Okay, I'm going to say Kaizen so you can drop it in. Kaizen. Kaizen. All right. If it doesn't work, don't worry about it. I just thought if we can fix it, great. If not, whatever. Yep. The founder of Kaizen is here. Sweet. You're the man. All right. Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. On today's show, we have Mindy Knebel. She is the CEO of Kaizen Health. This show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. We have had I feel like it's been a busy month and a half. I don't even know what it's like to be in our office anymore. We've had events left and right. One of the, I think, events that I'm most looking forward to coming up here is going to be a partnership that my good friend Katie Lynch from Codeverse has put together with the Lyric Opera House, which is at 20 North Wacker. We used to office there, which is why this is kind of cool, because Lyric and I also went to some plays as a kid in school, and so I totally get what they're doing. They've partnered for an incredible video game theme production of Earth to Kenzie that runs from November 5th to the 10th. You can buy your tickets at lyricopera.org. What else we got here? For this show and many other shows and all of our Instagram stuff, you need to follow us on social at Technori. For other interesting conversations and stuff to follow us, follow me at Catoon. The show today, we talked about a whole bunch of stuff back from Mindy's upbringing in Iowa and the reason that Kaizen is such a personal mission for her based on family members that have struggled. And in the health care industry, we talk about a million things. But the funny thing we don't really ever talk about is just like getting to your healthcare provider. And it's a huge issue. I kind of jokingly mentioned the fact that my dad is actually having a shoulder replacement this month. And I have as you could probably imagine, a somewhat busy schedule. And my mom is the one who will be taking care of this. And how are we going to orchestrate taking my dad from the hospital back home and just dealing with that? And he's completely able-bodied. And I obviously am, and my mom is. But for the people who are not, they more or less just opt to not go. And that's like a huge problem because you cannot not go to to treatment because you don't have a ride. And I just sort of stumbled upon the realization that I had always just thought all these old people in my building were just going to bingo at 8 a.m. It turns out they're getting on a PACE bus to go sit at a hospital for treatment for 9 hours because they literally have no other way to get to and from. And Kaizen Health is a behind-the-scenes company that's going to change this. And the market, addressable market's like hundreds of billions of dollars. And it's just totally mind-blowing. So this is my conversation with Mindy Knebel, the CEO and founder of Kaizen Health. And then I need to do my outro, right? To invest in featured startups or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, go to technori.com. Boom. That's a wrap. All right.